T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Wes Durham, voice of the Falcons, joining the program with John and Hugh for this 8 o'clock hour. Wes, good morning to you.
Hey, Wes, guys, how are you? Good to be with you.
What's going on, Wes? How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks.
So, overall, what did you think of the draft?
I thought it was interesting. I thought the NFL did a really good job. I thought they did a really good job given the restrictions and everything else. I thought it was unique. Like a lot of people, I love the insight of all the houses and the kids and things like that. I thought that just kind of, brought it real, to be honest, Hugh. And then couldn't help but be impressed by Cliff Kingsbury's setup. Holy cow.
I mean, he's what they call balling, Wes, not a baller.
Hey, I knew Cliff Kingsbury had it going on in a lot of ways, but he's really got it going on.
Yeah, he kind of took a dump on everybody in the NFL with that house of his.
Beat Roger Goodell's basement there. I mean, yeah, it was. If he just rented that house for that picture, then good on him. But
yeah, no kidding.
Wes Durham's going to join us for the hour. We'll be taking your calls as well at 404-741-0929, or you can tweet us. And if you want to tweet at BigHugh53, at John Fricke, if you want to tweet us, we can ask questions of Wes. To the Falcons, Wes, one of the things we've been asking this morning is, your impression of the draft of fans. It's up on our Twitter at 929 the game. What do you think of this? You love it. It filled needs, best we could do given where we were in the draft, and could have been better. Mm-hmm. I believe broadly that there was a desire by Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn and by Rich McKay and everybody to try to move up in the draft. I just didn't think that there was just nowhere to go. They couldn't make it either work, or there just was no way for them to try to move up in this draft.
Well, I think and Mike Conkey talked about this at the top of our show the other night, the point system that everybody kind of uses in the NFL to determine your spot, I think it made it virtually impossible. I think Atlanta would have had to risk the whole draft to get high enough to take, somebody, let's say, top five. And I just don't think that's smart business. So, if you know that, then you might be able to squeeze a couple spots here, a couple spots there. But the reality of it is that – you were going to get probably the same type player, within two or three spots. So go ahead, kind of be where you are. The fact they didn't move at all in the draft, I think, is a little bit of a surprise, especially as it relates to like fourth rounds and fifth rounds and that kind of thing. But all that being said, guys, I think at the end they filled a lot of needs. I think they got a couple of guys, two or three, in fact, that can blast off from the start, including Terrell, including Marlon Davidson. I like the pick of Matt Hennessy. It's a bit of an insurance policy at center, but it's also a guy who's a smart, tough guy who's 300 pounds, who's, kind of ready to play a little bit, who's played in a lot of different systems, who he understands a little bit of what's going on there. And I think that, and then Jaylen Hawkins, Michael Walker, guys like that, I thought were really important additions, not just from a down-by-down perspective, but also from what you can do in a special team set as well.
Wes Durham joining us for this hour. I was asking Hugh a little bit earlier about Marlon Davidson, looking at him as a guy that can be an interior pass rush guy alongside of Grady Jarrett, not just a run specialist, but somebody that can actually maybe help push the pocket too, which will kind of change the dynamic a little bit on that defensive line.
Yeah, I think so. I think Davidson's biggest attribute to me when you start looking at what he did was he had 11 sacks in his last 2 years at Auburn. The other thing, too, is that he's, because of Derrick Brown's emergence, Davidson was really kind of able to show his wares a little bit. He he kind of got lost in the shadow a little bit of Derrick Brown, but I think Marlon Davidson was a talented guy. I think that, you know, obviously first-team All-SEC, so we know he's a pretty good player, but he was second-team All-America too. And I think there's something to be said about, you know, kind of where he was. He was an all-freshman guy, but I think his versatility both inside and toward the edge really helps him a little bit. And I think a lot of people had him higher than people thought. You know, I got to be honest with you, when they got Marlon Davidson, I was like, wow, you know, this is a pretty good pick. I mean, it's a guy that, you know, I saw Marvin Wilson play a lot at Florida State this past year, a kid who came back to school who I think would have been a first-round pick. And Marlon Davidson is every bit as good as Marvin Wilson. And I think Derrick Brown's a really, really talented guy. But I don't think Marlon Davidson's that far behind, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that, Wes. And what I saw when I saw the little bit of film that I saw him, for a big guy, has great movement, especially in the hips, you know, turning the corner.
Right.
Can be a guy that could rush inside and outside. And you know what? It's funny because it's immediately when I saw him, I thought back to that conversation we had, about 5 years ago when you were talking about, hey, those linebackers don't look like the ones that you played with.
That's it, yeah.
And that's the kind of guys that Coach Quinn likes. He likes those versatile guys. So with that being said, can you see him potentially playing a little bit of that linebacker spot? Because he did drop into coverage a little bit when he was in college.
Yeah, I don't know. Not at 300 pounds. I see him being more of the – you know what? And here's the thing, too. And we talk about the, you know, the operating systems of these defenses, right, and how everything is nickel-based more or less right now, right? And it wasn't like that when you played and really – you know, when we started watching the NFL, John, it was four defensive backs, three linebackers, and four down linemen for the most part, right? And now we're really looking more at 4-2-5, 3-3-5 operating systems. I mean, and it's, to be honest with you, I think Marlon Davidson really fits the bill where Atlanta can change fronts. Now, you think about this kind of, Hugh, you tell me if I'm crazy on this. Atlanta could have Marlon Davidson, Grady Jarrett, you know, Dante Fowler, and they could be fine three-man, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would also think they could put somebody else's hand on the ground and be seamless in a 4-3 move, too. So how you have to wonder with players like Marlon Davidson, to a degree, Tyler Davison, by the way. Davidson and Davison, that's a radio man's nightmare. but how are you going to be – you're going to have a lot of versatility in your front – and be able to go 3-3 and 4-3 without really moving a lot of personnel up front. And I think that's a huge advantage for Atlanta if, in fact, because Fowler, we all know, can drop into coverage, you know, and play off the edge a little bit. How does that look? And I think there's one of the reasons Atlanta took a kid like Marlon Davidson. You know, I saw a term called a jumbo edge used to describe him earlier. I thought that was it's a pretty good term because he can play inside, and I think he's got enough versatility to certainly line up on the edge. I mean, if you got 17 sacks in 4 years at Auburn playing on the edge, you've obviously put a hand out there and gotten wide.
Yeah, and what? Not only that, you're talking about you know, just being, you know, you like when I saw him just lining up, just being able to do everything that Coach Quinn wants him to do, and
right,
don't have to change anything. So yeah, it's going to be exciting to see how they line him up. And how everybody plays in this defense, because they've gotten overnight they've gotten bigger.
Absolutely, I think in 3 days they and then you look at, you know, and again I'm not sure how many, you know, CFAs are going to make the team, but they got bigger guys on the CFA side too after the draft was over. But they did get bigger physically. There's no question about that. You know, in just the 3 days of the draft for sure.
We're talking with Wes Durham, the play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Falcons. He's going to be with us for the full hour between 8 and 9, so if you want to jump into the program, 404-741-0929. We'll take your calls for Wes. I know it's only six picks, so that'll shade this a little bit, Wes, but I'm without even looking, I'm relatively certain that this is the first time in the history of the Atlanta Falcons that they've taken only one offensive player in an entire NFL draft, and that none of them, no quarterback, no skill position, no quarterback, no wide receiver, no tight end, no running back, nothing, just one offensive player, and he's an offensive lineman taken in the third round. Tell me a little bit about Matt Hennessy from what you know and about how he might be able to help the team this year.
Well, I think he's a guy who, as I said at the top, I think Matt Hennessy is an insurance policy for for Alex Mack, but I think he's also a guy who, in his comments, I think, to the folks at AtlantaFalcons.com, talked about the fact that he could play, you know, kind of guard if they needed him to, but he could also be the, you know, certainly a center. I like the size. I like the height. I think he's a smart guy. I think he played for, obviously, Jeff Collins. He played for Rod Carey, and he played for Matt Rhule. He has played in three different systems already in his college years. I played at a very good high school program, Don Bosco Prep, and I just like the pick. I think he's an older kid. He's 22 and a half already. I think that there's just a lot of upside to what Matt Hennessy is. And he's the kind of guy that you take and you look and you go, well, okay, we took a center. But there's a lot more to that than I think one of the things I read is he's got great athleticism and mobility, things of that nature. He didn't give up a sack in 828 snaps, allowed four pressures in 828 snaps in 2019. So I that's kind of the material you see on him. And then when you start looking at his tape, you see that he's a guy who can certainly help, but at the same time, I think he's one of those guys that can play a lot of different spots for you, too.
And he turned down the Ivy League because he felt like he was going to go to the next level. Man, so he's definitely a smart kid.
Yeah, no, he's a smart guy, and I think he wanted to stay in the Northeast, as I understand it, for college. And I got a text from Jeff Collins telling me he's a great kid, and I'm looking forward to seeing him. I think he's the kind of pick that can play a long time. That's the impression I've gotten just by looking. I know he had a brother that played at Duke, who I remember, who also played at the Jets and that kind of thing. So I know that he's got a really good background to him as well.
Talking with Wes Durham here. All right, one more here, and then we'll get to a break and take your calls at 404-741-0929. There must be a scout on the West Coast that the Falcons really trust. You see DeMonte Casey coming out of San Diego State. And what he's impacted the team, and now they go right back into the Mountain West Conference up the road from SDSU in Fresno to get Michael Walker. And so if this scout who was ever over KC was also saying, hey, this kid Walker, he's going to be a player. And you and I were talking, Wes, about putting him with Jeff Ulbrich. I mean, so sometimes you find these little diamonds that you aren't expecting in places like Fresno and San Diego.
I'm just going to let Hugh say, did you watch the tape, Hugh? Did you see the clips?
I saw a little bit of the clips.
Did you see the hit against USC?
I was about to say, he looks like a Scud missile. He looks like somebody. You know, Wes, it's funny because initially when you look at these players and you look at these, they're individual pieces.
Right.
And people are looking at it and they might not understand the whole puzzle. But like I was saying, like you've gotten a corner. You got a corner that can cover.
Right.
You've gotten bigger up front, so you're going to put pressure on the quarterback. And even with those guys that can't cover, you got some thumpers.
Mm-hmm.
If Keanu Neal is healthy with this young linebacker, you got some guys back there that'll put that thigh out on you. If you do if you catch the ball, they're going to hit you with some of this thigh out. And that thigh out ain't no joke. It look like it ain't going to be no joke.
Well, and the thing I don't worry about Michael Walker is he a – a full space linebacker, or it's, you know, kind of 6'3", 230. Has he got, you know, athleticism enough? And we'll never know this until we see him. Does he have enough, ability to maybe play, you know, in the middle of the field a little more than people think? He ran, a 4.65 at the combine. But he's got arms that are almost 80 inches long. I mean,
wow.
He's 79 7/8 wingspan. So, I mean, the numbers on him from the combine, 32 and a half inch arms, wingspan of almost 80 inches. I mean, it's one of those things where you start looking at it and going, wait a second here. I know his dad played at Fresno State as well, but to me, he looks like the 6'3", 230 athlete that, you know, Hugh and I talk about at training camp sometimes, who can run, who can make plays in space, things like that. And he's a guy that not only working with Brick, but also working with Raheem, I think he's one of those guys we could see him play anywhere. And I'm excited to watch him play on teams because I think his speed and track background will help him on special teams as well, too.
Hugh, I'd like to kind of lean on you for a question, and then Wes, if you could jump in on the back side of this, because Wes Hugh was talking about different packages you can now run up front. When if you think about a kind of a pass rush package with Grady Jarrett, and to his right will be, as we look at him from behind, to his right will be Marlon Davidson, you know, a rookie in that other defensive tackle spot. And to his left will be Dante Fowler. I think that's how they'll line him up. Let's presume that's the case. How long, Hugh, does it take? Because we're talking about shortened training camp here, for Grady Jarrett to kind of get the feel for, you know, a guy on his right and a guy on his left, new guys that he's going to have to kind of play off of in terms of having to know kind of where they're going to be in certain situations.
I don't think it's not that hard for defensive players, John, because you just line up, you're trying to get to the quarterback. I think that, you know, that's it. You know, you line them cats up and let's go hunting. Like, you're talking about offensive linemen and stuff like that, they have to get their timing down and see where everybody's sitting. But initially, when you line those cats up, they're playing sick'em defense. That's what you usually call it, sick'em. And then as they go, then you start to work in little games and everything. I think that when you talk about with everything that we're dealing with right now, John, mm-hmm. Coach Quinn's, especially on defense, defenses always come in ahead of offenses when it comes to training camp. So you just let those guys play initially, and you coach them as they go.
I would think the other thing, too, that benefits Atlanta at this particular point in the game is, you know, we talk about returning guys in the college game a lot more than we do in the pro game. When you think about it, Atlanta has not seen a lot of attrition on its football team from a year ago. A lot of the momentum at the back half, and I know this is a bit of a reach in terms of thinking because we never talk about it in a pro game, but when you discuss kind of the reach, the idea that Atlanta brings a lot of guys back who were a part of that 6-2 finish, guys, I think that matters. I think that matters a lot right now. It's not Joe Judge trying to get things going in New York with the Giants. It's not, you know, Stefanski in Cleveland. This is a team that had real momentum at the end of the year, and I got to believe that a lot of these guys are chomping at the bit to get back, and there'll be a lot of in-house momentum for this football team that a lot of people won't be talking about. And I think there's something to that at this point, especially the way DQ coaches them. I think that's real.
Yeah, and you know what, Coach Quinn has said basically in the last couple of days that, you know, that these virtual classrooms. We all know that when football comes back, because Wes, next week, we're supposed to have training camp, supposed to, but that's not mm-hmm. going to happen. So it's going to be very important that everybody's on the same page. And I know it's going to be a little sloppy in the beginning, but I think that they're going to have the basic concept down of what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. I think the other thing, too, John, real quick, is this. The element in Atlanta is, and you go look at some of these guys on social media, I mean, a lot of these guys are working out and putting it on their platforms. I mean, and they're finding ways to work out. And I think there's a real commitment to, you know, kind of reclaiming what they had at the end of last year. And the fact that they're laying in the weeds behind all the things that have happened in Tampa and, the favorite status that New Orleans is probably going to have and things like that, I think that might sit pretty well with this group, you know, at least where things are right now.
Wes Durham joining us. Let's get to some of the phone calls out there. J.D. wants to weigh in on the morning show with John and Hugh and Wes Durham. Hey, J.D.
J.D.
Hi. Good morning, fellas. Good morning. Yeah, man, I was talking about the draft, man. I think we had a good draft, personally. Some of the picks, I felt like, at the time, I think I had, like, maybe we can get them later, but it is what it is. Get your guy when you can. I felt like they did. Got one question. Two questions. I know New England lost the draft pick. We traded for a second pick, the pick number 54, in the second round. We never took that pick. So I was wondering, what happened to that pick? Did New England lose it? And it actually was our pick, or can y'all raise the light on? May y'all have a good morning? I'm listening.
Yeah, that, J.D., that went to in the trade to Baltimore for Hayden Hurst.
That's correct.
So we had it from New England for Mohamed Sanu, and then we turned around and traded it when we picked up Hayden Hurst. Thank you, J.D. Got another one from Twitter here. And, Wes, maybe you can address this as a larger group. This is from Laura Williams. My biggest concern is we don't have the corners to contain Brady, Breeze, and Bridgewater here. As a group, A.J. Terrell comes in. A.J. Terrell comes in and joins, Isaiah Oliver Kendall Sheffield, Jordan Miller, Bleedy Ray Wilson. Look at the cornerbacks as a group and tell me kind of how you think all these guys are going to work out.
Athleticism, I think it's fine. I think what she's probably talking about is the experience level, because in the last 2 years you lose a guy, you know, who played a lot of football, Robert Alford, and you certainly this year lose True to free agency. And I understand what Laura's concern would be. But, you know, the way Raheem and those guys are going to coach it up, I thought that was a group that, you know, when Raheem took the reins of the defense at the backside of last year, I thought that unit played a lot better. But she's right. Right now, that you worry about experience level against a Brady and a Breeze, and to a degree, Bridgewater. But at the same time, every team has a concern. Now, is Atlanta's, you know, a valid one? I'm not sure about that. I think these guys, Terrell is a good football player. A.J. Terrell to me is a tremendous pick. In fact, on AtlantaFalcons.com on our preview show the other night with Arch, that was my pick for the first round because I sensed that the talk of edge and front and things like that was diminishing, and I thought it was a hope that they could, you know, potentially, you know, move up to get somebody like Isaiah Simmons. But to me, I think A.J. Terrell is going to be almost a plug-and-play guy. And, you know, don't forget Miller, Sheffield. I'm going to add KZ in that conversation too, Hugh. I think DeMonte KZ can play anywhere DeMonte KZ wants. We've seen Ricardo Allen play anywhere he wants. You know, it's all sorts of the versatility we talk about up front also exists in the back, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, she's a little worried, but the sheer size, they're bigger. They're bigger corners. They're bigger corners that can run.
Right.
That's a huge advantage. You know, instead of having some Lilliputians back there, some little guys going up against, you know, taller receivers, that's a jump ball situation most of the time. You know, especially if you catch a guy out of position. So these guys are going to be a little bit bigger. I think everything is going to be predicated on that pass rush. Everything is going to go how Coach Quinn and those guys get after the quarterback. Now, I know, like, over the last few years, Coach Quinn – hasn't really specified that there's been an emphasis on getting to the quarterback. He was mostly talking about moving him around and getting him off his comfort spot. But now in this situation here with those guys, with the size that you have in the middle, they're gonna have to get the quarterback on his back.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's one of the elements here too. The front has been I don't want to say completely revamped. But we're now talking about, you know, Dante Fowler, Tack McKinley, Grady Jarrett, Tyler Davidson, Alan Bailey, you know, in addition to Marlon Davidson and guys like that. I mean, it's a different look than it was a year ago at this time for sure.
Talking with Wes Durham, he's joining us for this hour as we look at the defense. You know, one name that hasn't come up yet and we haven't had any real reason to talk about him is Deion Jones. And I'm curious, from the linebacking corps, if they're only going to use two linebackers, you got now, of course, the new linebacker from Fresno, Michael Walker. You know, Deion Jones and Foye Oluokun as a set now with no Devondre Campbell, a little bit less size, but a little bit more speed and flexibility.
Well, and think about where the game is, too, John. I mean, yeah, how many teams are going to line up and, you know, just run eyeball at you now, right? I mean, it's just not going to happen very much in the NFL. It's a spread and throw league. You know, and when I say spread and throw, I'm talking about 11 personnel for the most part. You know, the two tight end set, I think, I haven't seen the analytics on it, but I'm going to guess that two tight end set might have been way less than 50% last year in the league as a whole. I'll go back to that conversation on the Hill 3 years ago. I just like where they are athletically on defense. Do they need to make plays? Absolutely. But I think you make a good point, John, the size of Oluokun and the size of Deion Jones. But that's the sacrifice, I think, just about across the board when people go to a 4-2-5 or whatever. The base nickel situation has really changed the size component, I think, in the National Football League. I mean, if you get, you know, again, we're talking Marlon Davidson's 300 pounds. Grady Jarrett is as good a leverage player as there is in the league. Tyler Davidson is close to 300 pounds, if not a touch under. You know, those guys are there. Then you want the speed of Fowler. You want the leverage of Jarrett. You want McKinley to be healthy and showcase his speed and power, too, in addition to what you've gotten, you know, here in the draft. And then, you know, Deidre Sanaat, who did not find the favor of the rotation very much last year when Atlanta scaled back the front, you know, Sonata's still on this roster and hopefully is able to bounce back and have a productive 2020 this year up front.
There is an arms race in the NFC South, the likes I don't think I've ever seen in the division. And you have Tom Brady and Ndamukong Suh going in and a push now to, you know, win a Super Bowl maybe in the next couple of years from Bruce Arians. Certainly, I think the same thing you're seeing in New Orleans with looming cap issues a couple of years down the road with now Drew Brees, a $21 million deal for Taysom Hill, and apparently tonight Jameis Winston joining that group in New Orleans.
Well, I think the Winston addition is fascinating because you're talking about, you know, a guy who's I think been pretty patient and pretty prudent. There were reports yesterday that I think Rick Stroud in Tampa is the one that I saw where Winston had three or four offers that were certainly more lucrative, but has decided to go to Tampa, decided to go to New Orleans for less money because of the situation it puts him in. And I got to be honest, if you're Jameis Winston and you want to figure out how not to throw 30-30 anymore, Hugh, you go work with a guy like Drew Brees, right? And Pete Carmichael, the offensive coordinator. You go down there and, you know, get in the film room and learn about decision making. There's no question Winston's got the athletic ability and the arm talent to do it. His decision making is what needs the rehab here.
Yeah, there's no question about that. As a matter of fact, I think one of the teams that they were talking about was the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
And he said, you know what? He's taking his career seriously because, you know, you talk about what he threw for, like 5,000 yards last year, something like that. But 5,000
yards and 30-30.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you can't.
Yeah.
He goes to Pittsburgh, and again, no offense to Roethlisberger. He goes to Pittsburgh, and it's going to be no different the situation that it was for Vic or no different the situation it was for, you know, a handful of guys who've gone up there. Pittsburgh has not proven to be a productive backup situation. New Orleans has. Think about what Teddy Bridgewater just parlayed his backup status to.
Yeah.
If you're Jameis Winston, I think that's a smart decision. I think it's a really smart decision. And who knows? Brees is in a situation, John, where we saw it last year. He got hurt in L.A. and missed five games, and Bridgewater went undefeated. Because the other thing, too, is the weaponry around Brees is legit. I mean, we all know how good Michael Thomas is, but New Orleans has got other guys you can throw the ball to as well, and I think that's one of the reasons you make that kind of decision.
With that being said, Wes, what do you think of Taysom Hill? I know we haven't seen too much of him at this level as a quarterback, but what do you honestly think of him from what we've seen of him?
He's Inspector Gadget for New Orleans. He can do anything, okay? And it's funny because I've done several Virginia games the last few years, and he played for Bronco Mendenhall at BYU, and Robert Anaya, the offensive coordinator, just laughs at what he sees him doing on Sundays because that's kind of what they – that's why I think Bryce Perkins, by the way, the Virginia quarterback, signed the free agent deal in L.A. I think Sean McVay sees Taysom Hill and Bryce Perkins, a guy who can throw it, a guy who can run it, who's a tough guy. That's exactly what Taysom Hill is. He's Inspector Gadget. He's the little piece in your offense that you got to account for every time he's on the field, and you're not quite sure what he's going to do. And I think that's exactly what the situation is with Taysom Hill. And I'm not going to be terribly surprised if it becomes Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia and if it becomes Bryce Perkins in L.A. with the Rams.
We're talking with Wes Durham, play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Falcons, and taking some of your questions in terms of, on our Twitter as well, Hugh. From Barrett Gay, a question for Wes. Have you looked at the undrafted rookie free agent signings, and if so, which ones intrigue you?
Okay. Yes, Barrett, I have, because that's one of my favorite little stories because somebody always seems to come out of there, right? The first one that popped off the page to me is, now these have not been officially announced by the team. Let me also emphasize that. But Thomas Dimitroff, I heard in Tanitra's report, feels like they're getting their CFA signed, which is always a good thing because, as Hugh knows, sometimes that thing can get a little sketchy. Where one cat thinks he's got a little more money coming another way and a signing bonus, as I always understood it, right, Hugh?
Yeah.
if some guy gets a couple thousand more, John, he can change teams in a heartbeat. The one that intrigues me the most is a kid, Jared Pinkney from Vanderbilt, who is a tight end. He's 6'4", 200 and almost 60 pounds. He's from Norcross. He had 114 catches at Vanderbilt, 14 touchdowns. Had 50 catches and 7 scores as a junior. Did not have a great senior season after after Shurmur left as the quarterback. So he was one of those guys that was affected by the quarterback change. He was a highly ranked tight end. In fact, he was higher ranked than some guys that got drafted. The other one is the wide receiver from Tennessee State, Chris Roland, who now, according to one of these draft things I've got, his measurements are 5'6", 185 pounds, but he set FCS receiving yards records. 1,437 was second in catches with 104. He broke a lot of the HBCU records that Jerry Rice had. He's been timed at 4.5 in the 40. I think Chris Roland is one of those guys that, you know, could make an impact, certainly once we get into preseason and camp and things like that. Those are the two right off the top that I'm most familiar with. I think it's going to be interesting to see what kind of role these guys play because, oh, and there's a youngster, Jawan Green from Albany State, who I think is also signed with them too, who is a 4.46 guy. And he grew up in Albany, played at Lackawanna Community College before finishing at Albany State. He was a 4.46 guy on a 6-foot frame. So I look at speed and size basically when I start looking at CFAs, and then if anything pops off the page, like the receiving numbers for Roland or the presence that Pinckney had, I was pretty surprised to kind of see how all that that plays out. And then again, you know, these aren't official yet because the team hasn't announced them, but at least the ones that have been noted so far, those are the three that caught my eye.
We're talking with Wes Durham for the hour, talking about the Atlanta Falcons, and, of course, all the focus has been on the defensive side of the ball where the draft was. In your mind, set on offense. Now, year two of Dirk Koetter here, mm-hmm. We saw the improvement in year two of, under Kyle Shanahan. I don't know if we saw the same thing under Steve Sarkisian in year two, but now year two of Dirk Koetter being back, of course, and you're expecting, I would think, that with all these weapons that are at his disposal, now you've got Todd Gurley, now you've got Hayden Hurst, now you've got a full year of Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry on the line.
Right.
You're expecting more from this offense, correct?
Well, John, here's where I am with this. I'm curious to see how some of these rotations in the front work. Has left guard been solidified? I think I'm in the camp with Arch, and I've heard Randy McMichael talk about it. I don't know where you and Hugh are. I think Matt Gano is going to get the first chance to win the left guard spot. I think his development along the way is really impressive. I thought he came in last year, played a little bit of guard, and did some good things for the Falcons there. If the left guard situation is solidified, then I'm going to feel a lot better about the front. I like what they've done in terms of backups. I like Justin McCray. Obviously, I like the draft pick of Hennessy. I know DQ said before the draft they like Harlow to play center and guard. I want to see a little more, and I'm still not convinced there's not a veteran piece added to that offensive front. I will also offer you that I still think there may be another running back here somewhere added along. Is it a college guy? Is it a veteran guy that's kind of been around? Like, I'm going to use Mike Davis, who's from Atlanta, who played at South Carolina, who's bounced around to a lot of teams. I'm going to use him as an example. So offensively, yes, I feel fine. Hayden Hurst, I like. Kari Lee. I talked to some people who are affiliated with Buffalo who saw him there, like him there. They think he can come here. And again, I'm going to go back to the improvement we saw out of Jaden Graham a year ago. I think guys like that are important to remember. They've been in the program. They understand the process, the coaching, things like that. Offensively, I think they're very, very close to being kind of what they want to be. Defensively, yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot of athleticism on that side of the ball. I know there's been a lot of talk about kind of where these guys go, how they line up. We talked about that. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch and see kind of the progress that we get to see and the progress we don't see, because I'm not sure what the status of these camp experiences is going to be across the league. I'm not sure how they're going to open. A lot of conversation about that. But the important work that's being done virtually, I think, with Atlanta could have some payoff on the back end if everybody kind of buys in across the board.
Well, Wes, it's been a phenomenal. It's been a quick hour. I mean, that went by fast.
Always a good time talking to you, Wes. Always.
Yep. Well, it'll be fun. The NFC South is going to be very interesting to follow, guys. And I'm hoping we're getting back to normal a little bit, and looking forward to seeing how the league tries to do this as we move into the month of May next week.
Yes, sir.
You know, the one thing is true. I mean, Carolina, people say what they like about, the Carolina Panthers. I think they're on the right track. I think I like what David Tepper's doing. But, boy, when you bring in a new coach and a new quarterback and a new offensive coordinator and you're trying to do it under these circumstances, it may be a little trying for them up at Charlotte this year.
They went and took seven guys all on defense. First time in the modern era that's happened. I mean, I'm really interested to see because they're it's going to be a bit of a transition, and you know the math doesn't work for everybody. We all know that, and this is going to be a really good division. It's going to be an incredibly competitive division, and I'm not so sure, guys, that you know with all the uncertainty we have in our world right now, that we're not going to see a lot of division games on the backside of the schedule this year for everybody, not just the NFC South. I think it's going to be fairly commonplace to see a lot of, I could be wrong, but it just in my mind, I think with the way the schedule lays out, I think we're going to see a lot of division games in the second half. So,
like we did last year, all of them, right?
Well, for Atlanta, six of the last nine, but I think because of where we are, John, just as a world right now, with some of the uncertainty and kind of how this will unfold, I think the back end of the schedule for everybody is going to be very heavy in the division, even more so than it's maybe been in the past.
Going to be interesting to watch. We'll see. The NFL schedule, I think, comes out, I believe, in early May.
May 9th, but I think that's just a potential date at this point. I'm not sure anybody's got any hard and fast rules on anything right now.
True. Absolutely true. Wes, do really appreciate your taking all this time with
us. Great to be with you. Take care, okay? Stay well.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.